Coming up on today's episode, Miami Dolphins football is back. What a game it was. The first preseason game against the Chicago Bears is under our belt. And we took the loss 20-13, but the result doesn't matter. All that matters is how our guys performed. And I saw some great, great things out there. And I saw some negatives. Don't get me wrong. So I'm here to talk about everything about that game. I'm going to share my takeaways on that, my reactions, go real in-depth into Tua's performances, and also look ahead at the next preseason game. Talk about the Atlanta Falcons. We have two joint practices with them this week. It's going to be really exciting to see how the team bounces back, how the offensive line in particular bounces back after that outing, which was not so well. But I'm going to be diving into the whole entire game. I'm going to share a couple interview clips from Tua and from Coach Flores. And then after that, I go into some Heat Summer League talk. They have been getting after it. If you guys have not been watching Heat Summer League, you guys are missing out because we got a pretty good team. And that's pretty surprising because Summer League sometimes isn't too entertaining. But this Heat Summer League team, they got some dogs. And if you haven't been watching, like I said, you're missing out. But I'm going to share with you guys how I feel about the guys, who's standing out, and a couple dark horses who I feel like could make the Heat team and can contribute in this Heat season coming up. So a lot of fun stuff, as you can obviously tell by this intro. So let's get right into it. All right, so let's kick things off with the Miami Dolphins. Finally, there is a Miami Dolphins game to talk about. Over this past week on Saturday, we have our first preseason game under our belts against the Chicago Bears. And I'm here to recap and talk all about that. I'm excited because this is going to be my first Dolphins game that I'm able to recap, dive into, and give my thoughts about it on this podcast since I started this podcast. Because if any of you guys that were listeners to me from the beginning, you guys remember I started this podcast probably the week after we got eliminated, and then I covered the entire playoffs of last season, but I never got to dive into the Dolphins season, give you guys an entire recap and all that. So I'm super excited for this one. Even though it's just a preseason game, it's something I love to do and I've been dying to do, is just recap my team, my Miami Dolphins, your Miami Dolphins as well, to you guys listening to this podcast, of course. And obviously, we picked up the loss, all right? We lost 20-13, as you guys all know by now. But you know what? There was a lot of positives that I saw and a lot of positives that I want to share with you guys, but there were some negatives, okay? I'm not going to paint a picture saying everything was perfect because it wasn't. And you don't expect it to be. It was just the first preseason game, all right? These are steps that we need to take. Other than that, we're headed in the right direction, all right? So I'm going to be sharing my concerns about it, everything I liked, and just an overall recap of the game. So waking up on Saturday and knowing that we had a game at 1 p.m. Eastern, I immediately took a shower, put on my Dolphins jersey, and I was ready to go from the jump. I was so excited. I was counting it down. Even though it was just a preseason game, I was super hyped, super excited, because we have a lot of things to look forward to with this Dolphin team. Like I talked about on this podcast, like many of you guys know, there's a lot of competition out there for different groups that we need to see a lot from. So I was overall excited, and I was excited to see our quarterback, QB1, Tua, start the game. And it was very nice to see him go out there. I thought he was only going to play two drives max. So I was pretty surprised that he was able to get a whole first quarter in and actually play three drives. But I'm going to talk about all his drives here right now. And the first drive, honestly, it was okay. It was okay where we didn't really get anything going. But the reason I say it was okay is because on third down, Tua threw a beautiful dime to Shaheen, and he actually dropped the pass, of course, and we went three and out, so we didn't get a first down on there. But I like that Tua was able to throw under pressure on third down situation right on the money, and of course it was dropped. And I'm sure, like all of you guys, myself included here, was just saying, here we go with the drops already, first preseason game, and overreaction time is here, right? Of course this is going to be the recipe for disaster all season, blah blah blah. Listen, that's part of being fans, right? So I was stressed out, just like you guys were as well. But then the first drive on defense, we forced a three and out on Chicago, and it was excellent defense. And that was pretty much the story to say for the entire first half from our defense. Our defense was locking up, and we didn't have a Byron Jones or Xavien Howard out there. Also, didn't have Jalen Phillips. But that's neither here or there. Nonetheless, guys were getting after it on defense the entire first half. Second drive on offense, though, I really like what I saw from Tua. He was able to bounce back. He came back and threw a beautiful, beautiful pass for a 50-yard reception to Mike Gesicki. And then we almost punched it in the end zone. After that, he threw a slant to Mac Hollins, got down at the one. And then Malcolm Brown tried to run it in for a touchdown two plays after that. And we couldn't get it in. We couldn't punch it in. The offensive line did not make any holes for Malcolm Brown to get in there. So it was frustrating not to convert a touchdown there because, you know, it was such a nice drive by Tua. You just want to see him score six right there. That led to fourth down at the one. And Jason Sanders came in, money, hit the field goal 3-0. But I was shocked, honestly. I was shocked by Flores' call there. I thought it would have been better to see Tua go out there, fourth down, pressure situation. It's a preseason game. Try to punch the ball in, you know, just draw another play, you know, because we know what Jason Sanders is. We know Jason Sanders is money. He's going to make field goals 10 times out of 10. It's very rare to see him miss a field goal, let alone from right there. You know what you got in Sanders. So I was honestly shocked. I would have went for it because it's preseason. In a regular game, different situation. I don't know if I would there. But here, for the first preseason game, and you're that close, you know the runs didn't work, back-to-back drives. See if Tua could do like a read option or maybe another pass to a tight end there. But nonetheless, we scored. At least we put points on the board there on Tua's second drive. And we saw him complete a 50-yard reception. So there was plenty of nice things that I saw in that drive. So that set us up right there with a 3-0 lead going into our second drive on defense here. And what I saw, another three and out. Like I said, this was pretty much the recipe the entire first half for the Dolphins defense. Eric Rowe with an excellent, excellent play on third down. He forced the Bears to punt. Beautiful pass deflection. So back-to-back drives, the defense started with a three and out. And that was encouraging stuff, honestly. I was really, really impressed by the way Eric Rowe played throughout this entire game. I feel like he was everywhere, you know, just deflecting balls, excellent coverage, the energy, the way he was celebrating after he was getting those deflections. Like, pure energy was what I saw from Eric Rowe, and I love to see it. That led us into our third drive, the third drive with Tua. And I want to go in depth here with this whole entire drive because this was the talk of the last couple days, right? How Tua was... You know, it led to the interception, but the whole drive, I feel like, didn't get talked about enough, all right? And I really, really love a lot of things that I saw from Tua this entire drive. So I'm going to share with you guys kind of like a deep dive of a play-by-play, real in-depth here about this final drive for Tua in the first preseason game here. So this third drive began with Tua throwing a nice dime to Mac Hollins for a first down, and then it got called back for a holding call on Jackson. So it brought us back even farther for a first and 20, obviously. And it's at this point, I'm thinking, man, there's so many glimpses here. I'm seeing so many positive things from Tua, but it's always something happens, whether it's a hold, somebody drops a pass, something always just seems to haunt us. But you know what? He fired back right after that with an 11-yard throw to a tight end there for the completion. And after that, a run set us up for a third and six, where Tua threw a beautiful dime just again to Mike Gesicki for a gain of six for the first down. So it was nice to see him move the chains there following a first and 20 after, you know, getting those guys downfield, handling pressure, converting a third down, which I thought was big time. I love what I saw from Tua right there. And then after that, back-to-back run set us up for another third down. It was a third and eight. And what did he do? Tight pressure situation, threw a beautiful strike in a tight window. Accurate pass to Mac Hollins for about a 20-yard gain, and that's the video that a lot of you guys saw, that tight window where he threw that so accurately right into the hands of Mac Hollins. That's what he did. That was on third and eight, so yet another third down conversion, another one. That's what I like. I really, really like how Tua was able to convert on third down time and time again throughout his entire first preseason game. That gets slept on a lot. I noticed not a lot of people are talking about that, but he was coming in clutch on third down. I really, really love what I saw from Tua when it came to third downs. Then on first down again in the middle of the field, Tua threw a 7-yard throw to Malcolm Brown after evading the sack and scrambling out of pressure. Malcolm Brown, honestly, he caught that 7-yard reception, but I thought he could have got more yards. He looked really, really slow to me. I don't know if you guys are getting the same vibe, but he looked really, really slow out there. Eventually, it led us to a third and three, and on third and three, Malcolm Brown got another carry, and he picked up 2 yards only, so he couldn't even get a first down there. That set up 4th-and-1, where the Dolphins did elect to go for it. Thank God, I was hoping they would. And Malcolm Brown got the carry, and he barely got the first down, barely got a yard in there. And the line honestly continued to show me some weak points, not only in pass protection, because I thought they were kind of okay when it came to pass protection. I'll talk about that later. But the runs, when it came to running, they could not really put a hole together. It was terrible. You guys saw it. You guys know. When it came to running, the offensive line did not create any holes whatsoever. It was disgusting. And Malcolm Brown, I think he averaged a yard per carry. I'll talk about the stats later. But anyways, we moved the chains. First down, it provided a check down pass to Myles Gaskin after that for a couple yards. Then it was 2nd-and-7. Gaskin ran for a carry for like 15 yards. He found a hole, turned up the jets really fast. Love to see that speed from Gaskin. And then that set up 1st down at around the 14-yard line. Really close to a touchdown. And then Tua throws an inside pass to Shaheen for a touchdown. And it got picked off instead by a Chicago Bear who was in the red zone. And it looked like a iffy decision in real time. And at first live action, as I'm watching it, it looked like he was clearly nearly going to get sacked from his left side. So I figured at that point, you just take a sack and you try to score again with the next 3 downs that you have to play with since it was 1st down. But then after watching the replay, you can see that he had Shaheen wide open. That would have been a beautiful touchdown. He would have just zipped it in there if he saw him at the right time, but he missed his chance. And because he saw him late, he figured, hey, maybe I can still do it. And that's obviously a recipe for disaster. You never want to do that. If you miss an opportunity to throw a touchdown in the red zone, you most likely got to go to plan B there, which is either get out of the pocket or even take a sack. And that's kind of where I was coming from when I said, you know, I thought he should take a sack, because looking at it live time, it really looked like the pressure was right there on his left side. But after watching the replay, I was like, oh, he had room to run in the right side. But you know what? He's going to learn from it. He saw the film. He's going to break it down. These are all fixable mistakes. This is nothing to be freaking out about. It's a fixable, easy mistake. So I'm not worried about that. And it's better for him to learn and build on these things in the preseason, in his first preseason game. Remember, Tua didn't have this. Tua didn't have a preseason last year. So I'm just thankful that we have preseason this year so we can see these type of things, learn from these type of things, instead of going right into the fire like we did last season, going into week 1 and kind of figuring things out on the fly. And after that drive, that put an end to Tua's outing for his first preseason game of his NFL career. And I thought he played okay. Honestly, I really like what I saw from Tua. A lot of great things that I took into consideration there. And besides the interception, which was an easy, fixable mistake, like I said earlier, I like what I saw from him. And I actually want to share a couple clips that are put together here about Tua acknowledging his mistake with the interception and how he thought he played. And here's what Tua had to say.
You know, probably not throwing it. You know, I think the DB made a great play. You know, that wasn't a good decision on my part. You know, when you get down to the red area, you got to make good, quick decisions. And that wasn't a quick decision. Or that was a quick decision, but not a good decision. You know, just something that I, you know, got to continue to learn from. Take that and put it in my arsenal, you know, and hope not to make that same mistake again. I was late. And, you know, in this league, you can never be late over the middle in the red area. And like I said, those are, you know, recipes for disaster. That's what happened. I thought I did all right. There are a lot of things that we need to clean up offensively, you know, with our communication, more so our execution with our plays that we're given. You know, but, you know, first time coming out, you know, in a real game-like situation, environment, you know, I thought it was pretty good for the first time. Obviously, there's a lot of things that we need to clean up, but that's what we got film for. You know, when we hop onto the plane, we'll take a look at some of those plays that didn't go the way we wanted to, and, you know, we'll get those fixed.
So there you have it. Tua clearly acknowledging that he made a mistake. He probably shouldn't have thrown it. He acknowledged that he saw him late. He acknowledged that he's going to look at the film. He's going to get better. He's going to learn from these decisions. And that's what I said. These are all fixable mistakes. He thought he played well. My opinion, I think he played well as well. I like that he was very honest with the media. I like that he was confident out there. He was taking the heat, explaining everything, had a good mindset, good attitude. Great job by Tua acknowledging his mistakes. I think his head is in a perfect place right now. I don't think there's too much stress going on with him. I think he knows this is his team. I think he's confident in himself. You can just tell. Like I said about it earlier, Tua has this boatload of confidence right now that you can literally feel. You can feel it through watching him out there on the field. You can feel it through the way he handles interviews. I'm excited from what I'm going to see from Tua going forward. But overall, that entire outing, beautiful throws, I thought. He was very accurate. Those tight window throws, the way he evaded sacks, his third down conversions, throwing consistent dimes like I talked about, playing the whole quarter, I thought he did a great job. Okay, I'm sure that he'll see the replay about the film like he talked about, and he'll fix it up. Okay, so I'm not at all freaked out about anything from what I saw from Tua. All positives. I have a good feeling about this kid. This kid is only going to get better, and he's going to grow as he continues to get all these preseason games under his belt, just develop, learn through his mistakes, do some good things, you know, go through an entire preseason, because these are all steps that a young quarterback, in my opinion, has to take. They have to learn how to handle pressure. They have to learn how to break down film. They have to learn how to fix their mistakes, how to see that they made a mistake, grow from that, take it all into consideration, and just get better from it. Okay, so overall, I'm not freaking out about Tua. Coach Flores as well was asked about how he felt about Tua's performance after the game. And here's what Brian Flores had to say about Tua and his performance and how he thinks that Tua did.
What did you think of Tua's work?
I think he did a lot of good things. I thought he made several good throws. I know he had the drop with Shaheen early. I want to say he had another drop, but he fired the ball in there on a couple in cuts, made some good decisions. Obviously, the one bad decision in the red zone. And we talked about it. I mean, he knows exactly what he should have done with the ball there. And, you know, correctable. That's what, you know, we talked about as a staff, something that's very correctable. And, you know, he'll make the correction and we'll move on and get better from it.
So there you have it. These are all things that I was basically saying earlier. These are all fixable mistakes. Tua knew it. These are easy things, but they're still great strides. He liked what he saw from Tua. Pretty much what we all saw, what I'm saying as well. He saw some good things. He threw some nice passes. He had the drops, of course, by some of the wide receivers there. But you know what? He's going to learn from that mistake besides the interception. That was the only bad thing. And like he said, he knows about it. He's acknowledged it. They're going to learn from it. Fixable mistake. But I really wanted to go into a full deep dive about Tua's entire outing for you guys, because that was more like the main thing that we were all looking forward to. And so I wanted to give a play-by-play about that entire last drive and give you guys my input on that. But Tua finished 8 for 11, 99 yards, no touchdowns, close to one, and the interception, as we talked about. But the defense, I thought, played really, really well. I'm loving everything I saw from the defense in that entire first half. Gaskin as well, I thought he busted out that nice run, which was awesome. That was great to see. Jason Sanders was on the money in the first half. He attempted 2 field goals, drilled both of them, of course. Nothing new with the GOAT, Jason Sanders. Nick Needham, couple breakdowns on defense. I thought the deflections that he had was awesome. I love what I saw from Nick Needham. Like I said, him and Eric Rowe were, in my opinion, the studs of the defense that caught my eye in the first half. I really liked what I saw from them. And how about Noah? Noah Igbinoghene had a clutch deflection on a 3rd and 10. It was one-on-one coverage. Excellent job. Excellent throw by Fields, but Noah was right there waiting for it. Punched it out for a nice deflection there. And how about Fields? Those first 3 drives, he went 3 and out. Our defense literally got a stop every single time. And the Bears actually didn't even pick up a first down until there was like 27 seconds left in the first half, which is amazing. Love, love, love what I saw from the defense. I think that the defense is going to be the key reason why our team makes it to the playoffs and is going to be able to succeed in the playoffs and advance. And hopefully we'll see how far it goes from there. But I think this team and this defense is going to be the truth. And it's only going to be the cherry on top once we see how Tua is able to perform. But hopefully that offensive line does improve, because if that offensive line improves, from what I saw from Tua, man, and that's not even having Parker out there. That's not having Parker. That's not having Fuller. That's not having Albert Wilson. Those 3 guys are obviously key to our offense. So just imagine having what we saw from Tua, having those 3 guys on offense once the season starts, and having this defense, the way they played without X and Byron Jones. Huh. Listen, overreact all you want that we lost this game. Overreact about the offensive line. But I really, really think that this team has exactly what it takes to be one of those high caliber teams in the AFC and be a very, very serious contender come season time for sure. But let's go back to the game. I'm sorry, I did get a little sidetracked there, but back to the game. The Dolphins ended up scoring a touchdown right before half by Jacoby Brissett, finding Savon Ahmed there for a touchdown on a nice wheel route, perfectly thrown. So it was a great drive right before half. And the Dolphins took the lead 13-3 at halftime. And like I said, the Bears didn't get in a first down until 27 seconds left in the first half. But the second half, the Bears came out and balled. They scored a touchdown right away, made it 13-10. Shortly after that, there was a blown coverage by one of the Dolphins guys. I forgot who it was. I couldn't really tell, honestly. Jesse James was wide open for a touchdown, and the Bears took the lead 17-13 at that point. And we ended up losing 20-13. Poor second half by the third stringers out there on defense. They did not play well at all. They didn't even put points on the board on offense. So that whole second half, I'm not really concerned about it because that was not even a lot of our real guys that are going to be able to make the team and start on a consistent basis. So Justin Fields, of course, lit them up, as he should. I mean, you're a first-round pick. You're going against third stringers. You should be lighting them up. So I'm pretty sure, I didn't even read it, but I'm pretty sure that the national media is probably saying Justin Fields outplayed Tua and completely forgetting about how terrible Justin Fields did against our defense, which, like I said, picked up one first down. Those first three drives, three and out, three and out, three and out. And Tua played the first stringers. I mean, God forbid, if Tua was playing the third and fourth quarter, he would light up the Bears defense, those third stringers, like crazy. But that's neither here or there. I never look too far into what the national media has to say about the Dolphins because they don't know what they're talking about, honestly. But overall, like I said, some negatives. Don't get me wrong. The offensive line definitely is concerning, but there was a lot of positives as well. And I want to talk about the stats real quick here. So like I said earlier, Tua was 8 for 11, 99 yards, zero touchdowns, that interception. Two of those passes out of those 11 attempts were drops, and the one mistake being the interception. So, you know, these stats, if you really watch the game, you know Tua did well. No concerns about Tua. He'll fix that mistake. Jacoby Brissett, I think he played okay. He was 6 of 10, 67 yards, one touchdown to Ahmed. That was really nice. I love what I saw from Ahmed and Gaskin. Ahmed had 6 carries for 40 yards, averaged 6.7 yards a carry. 2 receptions for 31 yards and that touchdown, 2 targets. He caught both of them, 71 total yards. I really, really like Ahmed, and I know a lot of you guys do as well based on how he played last year. And Myles Gaskin, 4 carries, 19 yards. He did bust out that big run, which was nice to see. You see the speed there in Gaskin. He caught one ball for 3 yards. Malcolm Brown, 9 carries for 8 yards, 1 catch for 7 yards. He looked awfully slow. A lot of it, you know, you can blame the offensive line for not giving him a hole to run, but he also didn't really help himself either. I didn't really like what I saw from Malcolm Brown, and it's probably because he's wearing the number 34, and the number 34 was worn by Jordan Howard last year, and we saw how horrible that went, and it's looking like the same type of thing we're getting here. And why? Listen, number 34 is Ricky Williams' number. That number should be retired, and it shouldn't even be worn by any Dolphin anymore. And if they don't want to retire it, then no Dolphin should come in here and ask for the number 34. Like, you can't wear that, all right? The Dolphin gods are showing you every sign. Like, listen, until you retire this number, nobody's going to do good with this damn number. So I feel like that's what's going on right there. But let's talk about the receptions. Mike Gesicki had 2 receptions on his 2 targets, 56 yards. Love what I saw from him. Lynn Bowden Jr., 4 receptions on 5 targets for 47 yards. He had a nice 17-yard one. Mac Hollins, I thought he was really good. 2 receptions on 2 targets, caught both of them, 20 yards. Shaheen did not like what I saw from him. The drop, obviously, he had 1 catch on 3 targets. Tua targeted the tight ends a lot. I think 5 or 6 of his throws out of his 11 were to the tight ends, which is pretty eye-popping to me because that's kind of what we assume Brian Flores wanted, right? In the draft, when he drafted Hunter Long, we kind of said, okay, this guy wants to run some 2 tight end sets like the Patriots used to do. And I know Hunter Long didn't play because of his injury, but you kind of got the idea that Flores wants to run some type of things with 2 tight ends, and Tua is really, really looking for those tight ends a lot. Now, I don't know if it's because he didn't have Parker there, because if he didn't have Fuller there, and the other guys, maybe he really didn't have many options. Maybe it's that. So I don't know. But it looks like he really, really likes throwing it to the tight ends, those big reliable targets there. So those are my entire takeaways and breakdown of the first preseason opener against the Chicago Bears. And like I said, we lost the game 20-13, but that's not really what I'm looking at. I'm really, really looking at the performances from that first string defense and Tua Tagovailoa. I like what I saw from him. And yeah, that sets up this week. We'll be hosting the Atlanta Falcons at home for the next game, which I'm excited to be able to see the team play at home. I know a lot of you guys that are listening to this podcast and a lot of the people I follow on Twitter, I'm excited to see a lot of you guys out there posting pictures and videos when you guys will be attending the game, because I know there's a lot of Dolphin fans that are already going to see this game. A lot of Dolphin fans I know are also traveling to go see that home opener for the preseason. So I'm excited. And by the way, to all the Dolphin fans listening and that follow me on Twitter, you guys are freaking awesome, honestly, because you guys had me pumped and ready to go from the entire morning on Saturday on game day. Like, from the moment I woke up, went on Twitter, I just see so many Dolphin fans taking selfies with their jerseys on, throwing out hype videos. I saw one guy chugging down beer, which is a good buddy of mine. If you're listening, you know who you are. You guys are just awesome, honestly. And this was like the first time for me, you know, being able to tweet and kind of talk about a Dolphins game on Twitter since I started this podcast. So this was a lot of me seeing all this stuff for the first time. So just the entire support from the Dolphin fan base on Twitter, how they show out on game day, like, that's exciting stuff, man. So shout out to all of you guys. That was really, really great to see. And I'm looking forward to seeing all you guys continue to post stuff and just have that great, great energy on Twitter, on the timeline, on the group chats. You guys are awesome. So big shout out to you guys. Looking forward to seeing that for the rest of the year. So yeah, the next game against the Falcons, we will have joint practices throughout this week against them, which is a good thing. And I'm kind of nervous to see how Dolphins Twitter will react if Kyle Pitts does go off, because I feel like he will. And then you might hear the, oh, we should have stayed at 3 and should have took Kyle Pitts. Listen, I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm not going to unpack that on today's episode, but we'll see how it goes. So hopefully we'll see an entire first half from Tua in the next game against the Falcons, which I feel like would be the case, being that we have 3 preseason games this season, not 4. So maybe this will be an entire first half for Tua, and then the final preseason game might be able to get 3 quarters out of him before we start up the regular season. But yeah, hopefully this offensive line develops over the course of the week and we head over to another game this weekend. So hopefully we get a win and hopefully we see some strides by this offensive line going forward. All right, so let's shift things on over to the Miami Heat. Now, today on this podcast episode, we're going to be talking about the Heat Summer League team, because honestly, if you guys have been missing out, you guys are missing out on a jam-packed show that they're putting on. Honestly, this Heat Summer League team, I love the way they play. They play aggressive. They play hard. They have that dog mentality. A lot of guys locking in defensively and a lot of standout guys. There's a lot to keep an eye on here. So if you guys have been missing out, I suggest you do tune in or tune into some highlights, because this team is easy to fall in love with. And if you guys haven't heard about how I feel about the additions that the Heat made on the offseason, about Kyle Lowry, PJ Tucker, Markieff Morris, just tune into the last episode of my podcast before this one. I talked about all those guys and what they mean to the team and my takeaway on all those. But today, for this Heat segment, we're going to be talking strict Summer League, since I didn't get a chance to get to it. And the Heat started the Summer League in the California Classic, where we went 2-0 over there. So it was really, really nice to see. And an emerging potential star came out of that, 7-foot guy from Turkey, Omer Yurtseven. He went off, honestly. He got signed by the Heat, which was nice to see, but he was dominant. In those first 2 California Classic games in the Summer League, he had 27 points, 19 rebounds. Then after that, his second game, 25 points, 8 rebounds. Man, this guy has some nice, nice touch. He can stretch the floor. He can shoot the 3. And that type of stuff is exciting, because you know what? The Heat have not been able to find a solid power forward since Chris Bosh. And I'm not saying this guy's going to be Chris Bosh, and I know he needs development, he's young, but what I'm saying is that you're able to get a guy in the pipeline here to just be able to develop in your system for a couple years, and I can see some potential stuff happening. You know, that might be the front court of the future, having Omer and having Bam put together. Obviously, that's going to take some time, he needs to develop, but hey, 2 years down the line, if you can develop this 7-footer into a solid stretch 4 that can rebound, block shots, and be in the front court with Bam, that's exciting. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves. All I'm saying is I saw a lot of great strides that man has taken throughout this entire Summer League. And also Max Strus as well. In his second Summer League game, he had 27 points that game. And that led us to Las Vegas, where the Heat are 2-2 in Las Vegas. But KZ Akpala, he's been playing in the Summer League. I'm not liking what I've been seeing from him. He has not taken those steps that all of the Heat fans pretty much thought that we were going to see in this summer league. Really, really disappointing because the Heat did give up a couple second round picks to move up and take KZ a couple years ago in the draft. And we all have been waiting to see what he can do, if he can contribute. And we just have all this hope for this man. But honestly, I think I'm kind of out on him. I think he's got the opportunity. He's failed. He's not done well. I mean, we've seen flashes, but enough is enough. After a couple years, if you don't see nothing, I think it's time to move on. And that's really sad to say because I liked KZ Akpala and I liked the potential that he had, but I'm not really seeing it. Over Las Vegas, Yurtseven continued to dominate. But honestly, the guy in summer league for Las Vegas has been Max Strus. I mean, he's been lighting it up, and he's probably been the most impressive guy, to say the least. We talked about his 27-point game earlier, but he also had a game where he had 32 points and 9 rebounds and a game winner as well. He had a game-winning three in double overtime against Memphis. That was exciting stuff to see because I think, honestly, I think he can be a real contributor to this Heat rotation. I think he's making a solid case for himself. He has a lot of confidence to him, and that seems to happen, you know, with a lot of guys in the Heat system, like Duncan Robinson was one, where you sit a whole season on the bench, but you're constantly practicing under Heat culture and under Eric Spoelstra and all these guys, and then that second year, you go into the summer league, and you completely dominate, and that's what happened with Duncan Robinson. That's how he made a name for himself. It started in summer league, and I'm kind of getting those flashes that the same thing can happen with Max Strus, so I'm excited to see him be able to play well, you know, live in the moment, get the game-winning three. He's talking a lot of shit out there, so I like to see his confidence go up. And I really, really like what I've seen from Strus. And this past Saturday, he added to that. He had 24 points. He shot 9 of 18. He was talking a lot of smack. He was mic'd up. If you guys didn't hear that, that was actually pretty funny there. But I really think he's making those strides, and I love to see that because I really think Max Strus can contribute to this Heat team. And you know what? You can't have enough three-point shooters in this league. And obviously, his summer league stats show what he does. He's shooting 40% from three right now in Las Vegas, and he's averaging 20.8 points. So I'm rooting for nothing but the best for Max Strus. But not only Yurtseven and Max Strus have been the guys, and that's what's so exciting, like I said earlier, about watching this Miami Heat summer league team, is that there's other guys. And by other guys, I mean two dogs specifically that stand out to me. And one of those guys being Marcus Garrett. This guy is from Kansas. His defense, honestly, and his presence is felt. Like, it's incredible. If you watch the Heat Summer League games, you know who Marcus Garrett is. Like, this guy gets after it. He plays excellent defense. He's always thinking one play ahead. Gets a lot of steals. Pushes the ball in transition. He likes to get out and run. Likes to play full court defense, too, which is always something that I personally really, really like. I love when guys pick up full court. Tire out the defense while the guy on offense, I love seeing that type of stuff. And hopefully he's on his way to earning himself a two-way contract in this league because I really, really like he fits right in. It's always somebody you need. You need guys that are going to be able to lock up. You need guys that are going to be able to get steals, especially the way the Miami Heat like to play. So hopefully, fingers crossed, there's a two-way contract in the works for him. And another guy, like I said, another dog, is this guy Giroux. Now, Giroux is from the Houston Cougars, and a cousin of mine is a big Houston Cougars fan. He actually went to Houston University, and you know what? He tells me all of these great things from Giroux. He was telling me about this kid for years, honestly. He told me, this guy's a dog. This guy's good. You need to pay attention. And I'm like, nah, man, I'm not watching no Houston Cougars basketball. But honestly, I saw him play over the tournament, and this kid showed pure toughness, determination, a will to win and play the way he was injured at one point, continued to make shots, and just never gave up on his team. And right there, listen, that just screams Heat culture to me, right? So I was really curious to see how he was going to do in the summer league. And he's been great, honestly. He's been able to provide a lot of defense. He's been getting after it. Not only that, this guy can get buckets. He can get rebounds, and he can also play make for others. If you guys have not seen his stats, you guys should look it up. Like, really, really encouraging stuff from this guy, Giroux. And I hope him as well is going to get his way to a two-way contract. So fingers crossed on that. Really, really love what I see from Marcus Garrett, Giroux, Max Strus, and obviously Yurtseven. So we'll see how it goes. But this Heat team, honestly, if you're not watching this summer league, you need to start watching. These guys are really, really fun. And I just love the way they get after it. And just they just really represent the Miami Heat and everything we're about. throughout Las Vegas. So I'm excited. This is real exciting stuff that I wanted to share with you guys here today. And obviously, the even bigger news that took place last week as far as the Miami Heat is we officially re-signed our captain, the OG, Mr. 305 himself, Udonis Haslem, re-signing with the Heat to come back for his 19th season, all with the Heat. I love, love, love to see that. Glad to have the OG back in the Heat uniform. And you know what? I'm excited. I know a lot of people out there have been throwing so much shade and are really, really upset that the Heat have re-signed Udonis Haslem because it's taken away a roster spot from a younger player and developing player and all this stuff, yada, yada, yada. You know what? Honestly, I love it. Okay, everything that Udonis Haslem is about, he has earned the right to be able to make this team and be on this team for as long as he wants, honestly. That guy shows up to work, he's hardworking, he busts his ass, he coaches up young guys, he helps with development. He's everything you need. You need veterans in your team. You want to be able to take that next step. You got to have a guy out there that's willing to get in somebody's face in the practice facility, or wherever it may be, even in the game. I mean, we've seen UD get after guys in timeouts. We need that type of stuff. And that's kind of a lost art in this league. You see all of these teams have 15-man rotation, not a rotation, but a 15-man roster, and it's filled with all young guys. You got no veterans. And back in the day, you used to always have to have an OG on that bench. So I'm all for it. I love the old school game. I'm always in favor of having an OG in the bench. So I'm happy to have Udonis Haslem personally because it speaks for itself. What he's done and his presence speaks for itself. And honestly, if you're worried about your 15-man roster being complete and UD is taking that spot, then we're in trouble. If you're really relying on a 15th player on your roster to contribute to your team and make the difference in a championship, we got an even bigger problem than at that point. So honestly, I don't mind. I don't mind having the OG Udonis Haslem back because, like I said, we know what he does, and he's key. He's key in development as well. I mean, you heard the episode on the Long Shot podcast with Duncan Robinson. He talked about how he gets on Duncan Robinson, how he was always getting on him about his defense, how he got to him and saying, like, listen, I tell you, Duncan Robinson, don't ever get punked out there. Like, don't even let people get in that habit. Like, stick up for yourself. Like, things like that. Like, Duncan has taken that into consideration because he kind of doesn't back down from nobody. Like, he's willing. He wants all the smoke. And that type of stuff, like, you need an OG that's been there and has the reputation of Haslem to be able to teach these things to the young guys, like the little things, you know, take everything serious, how to be a professional, how to be tough, how to not get punked, how to have confidence. The list goes on and on. If you're a true Heat fan and have been a Heat fan, just like myself, for pretty much my whole entire life, you know exactly what Haslem brings to this team and what he literally does to every single player in that roster, whether if he plays or not. He talks about it himself. He talked about it on that podcast. If you guys haven't listened to that, that was probably the best long shot episode of Duncan Robinson's podcast that I've heard. Really, really good stuff from Udonis Haslem. He says it. He's like, yeah, even if I don't play out there, that doesn't mean that I'm not busting my ass in practice and shooting the basketball every single day, which he is. Like, we know UD. Like, look at the shape he's in. That man is how old? Is he about 40 now? And look at the shape he's in. Come on, man. That's body of work right there. That's Heat culture. So I'm excited personally to have Udonis Haslem back in the Heat team. And I get it. I get it, though. I get where their concerns are because we want to be able to have a full roster, of course. You want to be able to develop people. But honestly, I'm all with Udonis Haslem being back, and I'm happy to have the OG back in Miami. All right, so that wraps up episode 31. Everyone, thanks you so much for tuning in and making me a part of your day today by listening to this podcast, the continued support that I'm getting from you guys, and the feedback. Oh, man, I can't tell you. It really means the world to me. Thank you so much for all of that stuff, the interactions that I've been having with you guys over the group chats on Twitter and on the timeline on Twitter. Absolutely great stuff. I'm really grateful for all you guys. I mean that. Remember, if you guys ever have any questions or want to talk to me or want my feedback on anything sports, baseball, football, any team, it doesn't even have to be Miami sports, please reach out to me. I've said this before on my podcast. A couple people have reached out to me for fantasy advice and things like that. Keep them coming, man. The messages are open at any time. I will gladly get back to you at any point. And also, if you're listening to this podcast via Apple Podcasts, if you can just do me a favor and just rate and review my podcast. It would take about a minute. It would mean the world to me as well. But other than that, I'm excited to see this Dolphins team this week in action against the Atlanta Falcons. I'm excited to see this Heat team continue to grow in the summer league. And a whole lot of good stuff. Miami sports is vibing right now. I'm vibing watching all this stuff. This is a great, great time to be a Miami sports fan. And guys, I will see you guys here next Tuesday and every Tuesday after that. Thanks for listening to the Miami Sports Vibes Podcast with Nando Diaz.